friends, this is Diana. Welcome to What's in the Title, the podcast that will deep dive into those jobs you always wondered about and maybe even secretly envy. Let's learn something new today. Hi friends, thank you for tuning in for the third episode of What's in the Title. This week, we're diving headfirst into the world of digital nomading. You know, those people who swap a fixed address for a killer Wi-Fi connection and basically turning Monday to a suggestion. But what's the real story behind this boundary-free lifestyle? Well, let me introduce you to the wonderful Yanis Fryman. He's not just a freelancer, he's a pioneer, a web agency founder, and a digital nomad who's basically written the playbook on how to live life on your own terms. And he does it with such grace and good humor that it's inspiring. Unlike your typical beach-dwelling nomad, Yanis has a real soft spot for vibrant cities as long as they come with a side of Asian heat and bustling energy. He's one of the most genuinely kind and free-spirited people I've had the pleasure of meeting. Today, he's joining us from Kuala Lumpur to share his insights. We're going to find out if this digital nomad dream is truly as idyllic as it seems, and if working from anywhere is actually sustainable when you're doing it with such style and for the long haul. Hey, Yanis. First off, I'm so glad that we could find the time that works for both of us to have this conversation. Even though we've met only a couple of times in real life, I always find our chat super helpful and informative. And I'd love to get your insights on what it's actually like to be a digital nomad and a tech founder beyond the hype of both of those words. So currently, you live in one of the most vibrant places in the world, Southeast Asia / Kuala Lumpur, where the weather is sweet and the social life is buzzing. Imagine you're at a party and someone asks you, what do you do? What is your go-to answer?
Well, hello, Diana. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on your podcast. I'm very happy that you've launched it. I'm very happy to be one of the first guests here. And I can only say that it's been our friendship been an absolute pleasure because, as you say, even though we've only met a couple of times in real life, it's been, I think, 6 or 7 years that we've known each other now.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of friendship that lasted through time and distance. It's a very wholesome, very fulfilling, very happy. So to answer your question, I think, well, to be entirely honest, I think I have a set of different answers depending on the context and situation in which somebody asks me this question, just like when somebody asks me where I'm from. But I would say that, yeah, I have a web agency where we take care of websites, where we help business owners with all aspects of their tech setup, whether it's the websites, whether it's social media, the software that they're using internally in their company. So basically, somewhere between consulting, creative, and technological agency.
I would love, of course, to talk a little bit about that because I would really love to understand more about your team and everything that you're doing. And I think it's going to be also interesting. There's so many people who need web design nowadays. But first, I would love to zoom out a bit because your life is so interesting that you even have to think of the context of the question. I saw on your LinkedIn page that you're freelancing since way back in 2005. Which is practically before that was even a thing. And when I met you in Kuala Lumpur, you were traveling across Asia, and it was fair to define you back then as a digital nomad. Tell me a little bit more about that journey and how this experience evolved.
Yes. So my personal story and my work career, my business journey, they're all very intertwined because I'm also somebody who was born in one country, but then grew up in basically two different countries. When I was 13 years old, my family, being ethnic Germans, we used the special program by the German government and were able to move from Russia, which was the country I was born in, to Germany, the country of my ancestors. And so this was probably the most foundational change in my life because once I moved from Russia to Germany, I also had access to things that I previously didn't even dream about. And a computer was one of those things.
Yeah.
So I had so much interest for it. I had so much admiration of it that the first thing I did with this, with this precious, shiny metal box as I took a screwdriver and I opened it up.
Typical boy.
I wanted to know how it's built, how it works, to study it literally from inside out. The very same pattern basically happened once I had access to the internet. I wanted to know how it works. I wanted to understand how people from different corners of the world can communicate with each other, how they can connect, what's the technology there, and how you can create a website. What is a website? What is this something that you can put online and let people from no matter where in the world access it and use it at the same time? So all of it was very fascinating to me, and I started learning it in my spare time after school. And then I would spend a lot of time finding friends on the internet, communicating with them, people who would have the same interest. And so very quickly, I started running into people who had ideas, who wanted to do something on the internet, but they didn't know exactly how to do it. And I was able to slowly start my journey where I would understand their business problem, basically, and offer them a technological solution. That's basically what it is to be this freelance programmer for me, or even right now, the tech director in my company. It's a very similar role. It's basically understanding business and knowing what technological solutions can help them. So this big change in my life where I moved from one country to another also opened the door to this future career of mine. And that's how it developed.
I think we were very lucky because we were just there when it all started, which is quite exciting.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of stories of how people learn themselves to code and all of those things. I can hear that you're one of those people, which is pretty much eliminating my question. Did you study it or not? But I can see that you did it yourself, which is amazing. I also think it's very brave because coming back to the freelancing, yes, you found this business need and you address it, but how did you even think about addressing it as a Yanis, the person, and not, you know, joining a company or something like that? I think this is very fascinating.
I think it's something that happens naturally in many different situations in life where you don't have a specific purpose. You're basically just enjoying your life. You're doing the things that you're enjoying. In my case, back in 2005, I would just... At that time, we had those things that were called forums, boards, mm-hmm. where yeah. people could talk about different topics. And for the younger generation, when we say talk, we mean write text without emoji, without pictures, just writing text. And this was the only form of communication, but that's all we had. And it was so different from whatever we had before, because before we only knew the in-person communication or maybe telephone, you know. So I was basically just on those forums and I would talk to people. We would talk about the internet, about things like HTML and CSS, those very basic foundational technologies. And every now and then somebody would join those boards and they would ask a question that was related to their business or to their idea. And this is how I would come into contact with those people. Yeah.
And how about the paperwork behind? Trying to be a freelancer myself, I remember I was very stressed about all the paperwork. What is the setting I need to do? Should I have a company? How do I charge people for my services and all of those things? Did you know this back then? And maybe now from experience, what can you share?
Well, this is something that I actually learned way later. It was one of the first questions that I asked myself. And I remember I wasn't even 18 years old at the time. So I went to the bank with my mom to ask if they can open an account for me. And it came with a lot of complications, with a lot of questions, because things in Germany are very regulated. The banker, he wasn't only asking me all those questions, he was lecturing me.
Yeah.
That, young boy, you should focus on your school, you should focus on your grades. Why do you ask such complicated questions as to how to open a bank account before you're even 18? So the environment was not very supportive of what I wanted to do. So in the end, it took a while until I could figure everything out, until I could actually have a proper setup. But then again, in the later years, when I was setting myself up properly as a freelancer, Germany is the country, the environment was very supportive because there were a lot of free classes paid and organized by the local governments. And this is where, without any cost, I learned the foundations of creating, starting your own company, how to register it, how to fill out all those forms.
Yeah.
I learned the foundations of accounting, basically the whole accounting, because as a young entrepreneur in Germany, as a young freelancer, you can't afford to pay somebody to do your accounting. You have to do it yourself. So you have to learn it. You need to know how to fill out those forms. And in the end, I think when you set up your mind for it, it becomes easier because you know that this is your goal. You know that you need it. This is one of your objectives. And when you find the information, especially when the information is very well structured, and I think these days it's even easier than before because these days we have the AI, we can ask the AI exactly this kind of question where otherwise in the years before we would maybe spend 3 hours doing the research and filtering the information. Right now it's much easier. So I think with that, the setup for freelancers, for young entrepreneurs became much easier.
And when you started moving countries, how this affects tax-wise, taxes and all of those things? What is your current registration, if that's okay to share?
Of course. Right now I'm in Malaysia. I'm the tax resident of Malaysia using their specific visa, basically called Nomad Visa. So it's very straightforward name. It's essentially what it is. And this visa, in my case, allows me to live in Malaysia for 1 year, then I can extend it. And during this 1 year, I have to work for a non-Malaysian company while paying my personal tax in Malaysia. So for me, it was a very convenient, a very suitable solution. There are other countries offering similar solutions. Georgia, for example, is also quite a popular destination for digital nomads, or at least it used to be. I'm not sure about how it is right now. So there are definitely different ways to set it up. There are different ways to optimize your tax. When I first started being a digital nomad, it was 2014. And at that time, I was a student in Germany. So basically, I took a 1 year break from my studies. And during that time, I remained a German resident. I remained German tax resident. At the time, I spent 1 year traveling around Europe in Asia. And this is probably the most nomadic 1 year of my life.
Yeah.
And tax-wise, it was very easy back in the day because I had my student status in Germany and I just retained that status.
So it's fair to say that if you want to become a digital nomad right now, or in other words, if you would like to be able to travel and work, maybe the easiest way is which are those countries that have the digital nomad visas? Because I think also Lithuania is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Even in Bulgaria, where I'm from, we kind of have nice setup, or at least the taxes for a company are very low, which is a reason that many people would set up companies in Bulgaria. So that's one of the things that you would look at.
Yes, that's true. It's very specific to the country that somebody is a citizen of, a resident of. Some people have multiple citizenships. It can give more flexibility sometimes. Sometimes it can be more of an obstacle. I don't think that it's one of the first questions that many nomads ask themselves, but I think it's one of the good first questions to actually ask yourself. How can I make sure that my lifestyle stays legally compliant?
That's because most of the nomads are very free spirited. And that's why I'm not a nomad, because when I want to become a nomad, then my first question is how I'm going to set it up. What's the structure? What is everything? So I guess that's why I let corporations do this for me.
If I may add something, not to make it sound more complicated than it is and discourage people from this idea. In most cases, if you're only traveling for, say, 1 month at a time in a country, if you choose to be a nomad for a year, for example, and explore a different country every month, then in most cases, you don't have to worry about anything because you basically remain a resident of your country, especially if you're working for a company in your country that gives you the opportunity of working remotely. In most cases, nothing changes for you. Your status may change when you start spending more time in other countries, especially when you start spending more than 6 months in a different country.
And if we now talk a little bit about the other side of things, which is being a founder of your company, and setting up a company legally as well. Did you do this while you were living abroad, or how does this work? Do you have any advice?
So for me, it was very simple because for the context at the time, I was living in Germany. I just finished my studies. My student status was about to end and I would be taxed on a completely different level. So I had this one problem right ahead of me. At the same time, I was working with my former co-founder of my company. And at that time, we were two freelancers in Germany, but we were working on multiple projects together. we found it a little bit annoying and inconvenient that we had to remain two individuals, that we couldn't form a company together, because both of us, we are from immigrant background. We don't have families that would be able to support us. We didn't have access to any financial resources that we would be able to use to form a company in Germany. So we were looking for alternative solutions. At the same time, we realized that if we start a company in Germany, we will be in a very competitive environment. And we actually wanted to find just a better environment, an environment that made it easier, an environment that gave us better starting conditions. And about that time, I heard about the e-residency program in Estonia, which is one of the most beautiful things that I've encountered in my life. It's a program where you can become the so-called e-resident, electronic resident. And with that, you can register a company in Estonia, you can open a business, and you don't have to be physically present in Estonia, you don't have to be a resident of Estonia. Basically, it was the perfect solution for me at the time, as I wanted to have a company, and I didn't necessarily want to live in the same country as my company would be in. So I opened the company in Estonia, I moved to Latvia, because again, this is one of the countries that I have ancestors from, and my name, Janis, it's a Latvian name, which means John. So I've always wanted to have a chance to live there for a while, to understand the culture, to learn some language, and the location independence of my business in the end allowed me to do that.
How many languages do you know by now?
Not so many. I think I would always like to learn a little bit from a certain language just so I can have a very simple conversation. But I wouldn't say that I know many languages, because to know, to be able to speak fluently, it's a different level.
I'll give you that, but I know you're very humble right now. Because you mentioned the competitive landscape, especially with web agencies, absolutely. Do you now focus on a specific niche? What channels have you found to be the most successful getting clients and reaching out to potential clients? I think this is a very big question mark, especially in the B2B environment.
Right. There are mostly two channels through which I acquire clients. One is in person in the co-working space. I try to network in the co-working space. I also try to go to conferences sometimes, to business conferences. They are not always the ideal place to find your clients, because a lot depends on what kind of conference it is, what kind of companies are there. So you have to understand your target audience, basically, to know if this is suitable place to find clients or not. But generally, co-working spaces work really well, because you have a lot of entrepreneurs in one small space, a lot of people who might need your services. The second channel, well, I'm calling it the second channel, actually it's the primary channel, is the partnerships. I try to always find new partners. I try to always look for new marketing agencies or marketing agencies that I haven't found previously, because the services that my company provides are a perfect match with the services that marketing companies offer to their clients. And this is for me also one of the ways to offset this, I wouldn't call it a flaw, but the fact that I cannot be physically present in my primary market, which is still Germany. So to offset the fact that I can't be present there physically, I try to find partners in Germany who are there, who can take care of the communication with the client, while at the same time providing both of us, both agencies, with projects.
That's really cool. I, by the way, didn't know that your primary market is Germany. Talking about clients and communication, how do you handle project management across maybe different time zones? Are there any tools or strategies that you swear by?
There is one very simple rule that I've always followed in my communication with my partners or with my clients. It's to always reply within 24 hours. Even if something happens where you need to spend more time, say there is an error, you need to spend more time analyzing it and understanding what really happened, or somebody is waiting for a new feature, somebody is waiting for a new set of materials. Just communicate clearly how long it's going to take, communicate clearly when you are going to look into it. But as long as you are consistent and reliable in your communication, the time zones will not matter so much. There are clients who want to be able to call you 24/7, but even for them, having half a day of overlap time is normally enough. Because in the end, as long as you communicate how and when you go and deliver, it depends on your workflow. So for example, in web development, we have to upload certain functions to a website or to a web application. You would only do it when you know that for the next couple of hours, you are there. So you wouldn't do the last thing before you head home.
And in terms of all the Trellos of the world and Slack and all of those things, do you have a favorite or do you use all of them? Or is there a new one that is like super cool that I don't know of?
So from the tone of your voice, I can hear that you may also feel overwhelmed with the amount of tools that are available over there. And I have to tell you that even though I work in this industry, even though I'm very close to all the different new technological tools, I do also feel overwhelmed by just how many tools there are, just how many of very, very similar tools there are.
Yeah.
My favorites, I think that the tool number one in my business is Notion, because Notion allows you on one hand to store the information, to create the databases, to list all the specific information that your client would need, that your colleagues would need in one place, while at the same time, it gives you the flexibility of creating Kanban boards, for example. So I love Trello. I love the interface. It's useful, but it doesn't feel heavy and corporate like some other tools. For smaller projects, I would just go for Notion because I would be able to have the information storage and project management inside one tool. And number two, I would say, is Google Workspace. So it's a set of most commonly used Google tools, email, calendar, Google Drive. And this is the tool that I've been using continuously since day one of my business. And I think that even if Notion and Slack and other tools didn't exist, Google would be able to fulfill my needs. It's just with tools like Notion, things get easier.
Yeah. Maybe let's talk a little bit about your team. How many people do work in the company right now? Are they also working remotely from different places? Are they closer to you? How does that work?
So actually, we've only had two people in our team until last year when my co-founder left, which now leaves me the only member of the team. But what I have really leveraged in my company is the partnerships. And for this reason, I also have the agreement with my partners that we can display each other on our websites. We can present each other as team members because we have this philosophy that we are all independent creators and we choose to work together as one team.
I love that. It's very cool. And again, very progressive. Yiannis, you're a total trendsetter in everything you do. Starting back with your freelancer and specifically this beautiful story of the German banker who's like, you have to go back to school.
Thank you.
So did you ever get back to study? What did you actually study in university? Was it computer related?
That's a good question. By the time I was choosing what to study, I didn't know exactly what I was going to pick. You see, at the time, I already started developing interest for Asia, and I was learning Chinese in the evening classes. By the time it came to the moment when I had to choose what I was going to study, I already traveled to China twice. I knew that I wanted to connect my life to Asia or to China specifically. I knew that I have a lot of knowledge in IT because by that time, I had 8 years of experience in programming websites, knowing how the internet works and all those things. I couldn't choose between computer science and Asian studies. What I did, I started both at the same time.
Wow. I did not expect that.
I figured out that I wanted both and I wanted them equally. So I decided that I have to try both.
Yeah.
The administration of the university was very skeptical of my plan. They said, you just have to pay your tuition once and with this tuition, you can study as much as you want. Luckily, computer science started on time, but Asian studies was delayed. So I could just dive in into computer science first. I spent 1 week going to all the computer science classes when I realized that I couldn't realistically handle it because of the very, very high workload that was expected of the students. For me, however, it meant that I would have to study all the time and I wouldn't be able to take a side job. And without a side job, it would simply be way too difficult to get through university in the first place. And then 2 weeks later, the Asian studies classes also started. And I had a very different feeling towards them. I had some knowledge. So specifically, I had the knowledge of Chinese language, which helped me get 2 semesters of Chinese language credited from the beginning. Then I was quite familiar with the topics such as history or economics. And when the time came to compare the experience, I realized that even though I would still tend to have a degree in a scientific field, you know, Bachelor of Science instead of Bachelor of Arts, realistically, Asian studies was much easier. And
here you are in Southeast Asia today.
Here I am.
Doing tech, doing programming, and living in Asia. I mean, that's a very good success story.
Thank you.
Your whole lifestyle looks like it requires a lot of adaptability and resilience. Is that how it feels? You're traveling, you're working, you're being your own manager. There's a lot of work-life balance lessons, I assume, there. What would you say about that?
It's absolutely true. Being adaptable and flexible is one of the number one qualities, or let's call it the skills, because the skill is something that everybody can learn. And I believe that adaptability and flexibility can also be learned. My whole story as a nomad, I don't think that it started as much by choice as by the circumstances of my life. I was born as a German in Russia, where I didn't really feel that I belong. At 13 years old, my family moved from Russia to Germany, where I thought, finally, I'm going back to the country of my ancestors, to the country where people are going to recognize me as their own. But that didn't happen. People saw me as much of a foreigner in Germany as much they did previously see me in Russia. I think this was one of the reasons that created this discomfort inside of me. I knew that I can't go back to my home country. I also knew that I'm not enjoying my life in Germany. And this is why, as soon as I was done with my high school in Germany, I actually left the country and I moved to the country next door, to France. I started working there. And I think from this experience, and having moved somewhere else, having found work there, and actually experiencing this fact that you are able to move to a different country, find a place to live, find work, and feel much better, feel much more welcome, feel more comfortable in the environment that you discover. This experience gave me the courage to travel as a nomad and to visit even more countries while looking for places where I would feel comfortable, looking for places where I would feel happy. At the same time, working while traveling, it does require you to be adaptable, because you are not always going to have the comfort or the stability of your own workplace. To give you an example from my very first year as a nomad in 2014, the one thing that I would look the most when choosing a place to work was actually a table. Good, sturdy table is so important to sit comfortably and be able to do your work for hours, having enough space to put your elbows on, to sit there ergonomically. I would never expect it to have actually felt in my body the importance of it until I started being a digital nomad. Things like the internet connection are very obvious. It's something that you would expect. But the environment, like the temperature, the air quality, there are a lot of things, and you will only know what things matter for your productivity when you actually try out working from different places.
We talked about change and the adaptability, which it's not always positive. I think also once you do it successfully, that change, what you did when you changed first to Germany and then to France, and then you felt good. And it's like, I can do it again multiple times. I will succeed and I will feel good. So why not do it again? I think this feeds a lot of the next journeys, and I love that. What is the most rewarding aspect of your lifestyle and your entrepreneurial journey so far?
As cliche as it will sound, it's the freedom. It's the freedom to be able to choose your environment, your lifestyle, your work routine. I'm not a typical nomad where I would move to a beach town. I'm actually the person who enjoys big cities. I'm also the person who likes co-working space. To a lot of people, it's confusing to see me being location independent and then choosing to live in a big city and to go to an office building. To me, there is a freedom in it because I chose the city where I live. I am choosing the co-working space that I go to. And every day I'm making this conscious choice of whether I want to work in this particular office today, or maybe I want to go to another one, or maybe I want to go to a cafe. The freedom to make those choices, I think it's probably the most rewarding thing.
And you're right. One of the visions when you say digital nomad is somebody on the beach. And I'd like that we just debunk that you're not necessarily on the beach. You can be pretty much wherever you are. And actually, if you're at the beach, it might be a little bit uncomfortable. And do you have the usual 9 to 5? Maybe another myth is that when you're freelancing, you can start at 11 and, you know, work for 1 hour, haha, and that's it. I assume that's not fully it because you have so many clients to think about. Am I right?
It's such an individual thing. For me personally, I like waking up early. I like to start my day before most people do. I like to see the sun rise, for example. I don't think my days can be easily described as one way or another. Sometimes it's maybe 7 till 9 because I'm doing something that I love. I'm enjoying it. I want to finish it. And then the next day I'm going to work for half a day only. And then maybe I'll go hiking in the afternoon. I think it's very important to distill the business processes which really require you and processes that can be automated or delegated. When you can automate or delegate something, it's absolutely necessary that you do. Because then you can use your time more wisely.
That's a super valuable advice for everybody who's there or dreaming about it.
I think there is one topic that we should cover before we close the session. Maybe it's a topic that a lot of people talk about, but I think it's good if we dive a little bit deeper into it, which is the biggest challenges of actually being a nomad. Besides adaptability that you mentioned, a very useful thing to add to adaptability is that it's not only about your environment. You also have to be mindful and be able to adapt to your feelings, to yourself. So what I mean by that is if somebody who hasn't traveled as a nomad before, who hasn't switched countries, let's say at a higher pace, I think that even once a month is still challenging, is still a somewhat higher pace because the more frequently you travel, the more stress you're going to feel from the change of environment. Suddenly, the language around you is going to be different. Suddenly, the currency that you're dealing with is going to be different and you have to calculate it differently to understand the value of things around you. You have to use different transportation methods. If you just take the example of Malaysia and Thailand, which are neighboring countries, which are the countries in the same region, in Thailand, you can very well rely on the public transport, while in Malaysia, you will depend a little bit more on taxis, on private transportation. All those micro changes in your environments, they're going to stack up. They are going to create more stress. And so it's very important to not only be adaptable to your environment, but also develop a very good sense of your feelings, of your emotions, to know when you're tired, to know when you're overwhelmed, and then to take rest, which again is different for every person. For somebody, it's going to nature. For somebody, it's sleeping a little bit more. For somebody, it's spending a bit more time with friends. And for somebody, it's spending a little bit more time with a book. And another aspect of being a digital nomad, which I think a lot of people talk about, and I can only confirm, is the fact that the loneliness can be a very, very challenging companion to a nomad's life. And even for me, it was something that I didn't realize when I started traveling. I've always perceived myself to be an introverted person. So I thought that traveling and spending more time with myself and by myself would make me a happier person. But I had to learn the lesson that at some point I was feeling very lonely. And sometimes I actually should share with people instead of holding everything in. And so when you're traveling, that becomes much more difficult because you don't have your usual circle of friends around you. And it doesn't matter whether your circle of friends is big or small. It's the feeling of having your friends nearby.
Yeah.
That gives you a lot of emotional support. Communities, therefore, are very, very important for nomads. And luckily these days, it's easier than it used to be because I remember some of my first trips, even before I became a nomad, where I would go to China, for example, and I spoke the bare minimum of Chinese that I learned after just 1 year. And I would try to challenge myself and go to a city where other white travelers would not go to, because I wanted to experience something very, very local and very unique and special. And it would come at a very high cost. Difficulties in communication would hit harder because there was no fallback.
Yeah.
There were no apps like today where you could ask somebody to speak into your phone and it will translate it to you. And while those particular problems have been eliminated with the technology, loneliness is still there. And whenever I talk to my nomad friends, all of them can confirm that this has been one of the biggest challenges for them to overcome.
Yeah.
And the second one is you also have to keep a certain level of discipline, because if you want to experience staying somewhere by the beach and working on your laptop while sipping on a smoothie or, you know, coconut water, you have to realize how challenging it's going to be. Because when you're sitting on the beach, when you have a coconut in your hand, your body will not necessarily feel like doing work.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit in the beginning offline that I do spend usually a month working remotely. And last year we had a great idea to spend 4 months. Every 2 weeks we were changing. So I was working the whole time in my 9-to-5 environment. And exactly as you said, even changing the setup, your bedroom, where you cook, even what they sell in the stores, this pretty much falls into the myths about digital nomading that we'd like to debunk.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for being my guest. I do believe that every aspect of your lifestyle, from the traveling to founding your own companies, moving countries, learning so many languages, I'm absolutely sure you also speak French because you mentioned working there. It takes really a lot of courage and bravery. And I'm super, super honored to know you and call you my friend. And thank you very much for agreeing to speak on the podcast.
Thank you, Diana. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If this episode made you smile, curious, excited, or anything in between, go ahead, follow, and subscribe. See you next time.